What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. This is the final episode in our two-part series celebrating the music of the late Russell Webster, a legendary Naptown saxophonist and composer. On this week's edition, we'll again be joined by Russell's daughter, Bonita Webster Coleman, and his wife, Lexi Webster. We'll also hear from Steve Ali and Justin S. Kinchin, two Indianapolis musicians who were inspired by Russell Webster. We'll be focusing on Russell's self-produced 1983 double LP, Uncle Funkenstein. The album featured an all-star lineup of Naptown jazz musicians, including Larry Ridley, James Spalding, Pookie Johnson, Mel Ryan, Clifford Ratliff, and others. Uncle Funkenstein has been called a holy grail of jazz. Original copies have sold for over $4,000. And in 2008, the album was reissued by the British label Jazzman Records. We'll listen to a track from the Uncle Funkenstein album now. This is Russell Webster with Rock My Cradle. That was the late Naptown jazz musician and composer Russell Webster with Rock My Cradle. WFYI's Kyle Long recently spoke with Russell's daughter, Bonita Webster Coleman, and his wife, Lexi Webster. Let's join their conversation as they discuss Russell's work as a composer.
In addition to being a jazz flutist and saxophone player, Russell was a composer. He composed music. You mentioned he was whistling and composing as he worked. Right. How much time did he spend writing music at home?
He would write music
almost every time
he had a chance. He would be writing music.
There were big buckets of scores.
Well, he just had music. He would just write on anything that he could do. If a tune would come to his mind and he would jot it down.
In addition to composing traditional jazz works, he was also writing more elaborate pieces, right, for orchestras. And, you know, I want to ask you about his album, but he wrote some pieces there for strings and for larger ensembles, right? Tell me about the scope of writing he did as a composer.
Well, I guess he would just hear all of these instruments in his head and jot it down. And the way he wanted it to be in whatever he was writing.
Where does life come from? Where does life come from? Shooting and killing, wars without meaning, it's a shame. Oh, what can we do? Life could be much better. Brother, if we got together, where does does life come from?
His greatest masterpiece as a musician is the 1983 double album Uncle Funkenstein, which he produced independently, correct, and paid for independently.
Right.
He recruited and brought in some of the greatest Indianapolis jazz musicians of all time. James Spalding and Larry Ridley came out from New York to play on the session.
Right.
Mel Rhine, famous for his work with Wes Montgomery, played piano on the record. Pookie Johnson was also on the record. This is a landmark recording in Indianapolis jazz history, and it's internationally known. Its original copy sold for $4,000. It was reissued by a record label in England. Tell me a little bit about how this project came to Russell and how he made this extraordinary session happen.
Well, he studied the musicians, and he knew exactly who he wanted to play with and how he wanted it to sound, and he handpicked his musicians because those are the ones that he wanted on his album.
One thing I wanted to throw in there is when, after he pressed it, he tried to get it on several radio stations, and they wouldn't play it. And he said it was because of payola. You had to pay somebody to play your music, and he felt like his music should stand on its own. So he ended up buying his own record label and calling it Lexi.
Named after your mother.
Yeah.
Bonnie, you must have been pretty young when he was recording this, right?
No, I was in my teens.
Okay.
Do you
remember anything about it?
Oh, yeah. I remember a lot.
Do you know what studio he recorded it in, or was it done at home? Or
It wasn't done at home. Although, when I was a real young kid, they used to have jam sessions and rehearsals in the front room of our house. And I remember I used to have to make drinks for some of the musicians.
You're like a bartender?
Yeah, I was a bartender. I was.
Going back to the Uncle Funkenstein album.
It's Uncle Funkenstein.
Funkenstein. Okay. Tell me about that name.
Well, I think George Clinton was kind of popular back then. And so he wanted people to know that jazz wasn't just jazz. It encompassed all kinds of music. And that's why he wrote scores for violins and everything else. And he just said, it's Uncle Funkenstein, but he didn't spell it that way, so nobody would pronounce it that way. And then the reunion riff was the first one, but my husband and I's favorite is really Blue Robe.
It's an incredible track.
Yeah, that one is really incredible.
Let's take a break from our conversation and listen to another track from Russell Webster's 1983 album, Uncle Funkenstein. This is Together Again. That was Russell Webster with Together Again from his 1983 album, Uncle Funkenstein. Up next, we'll hear from the great Indianapolis jazz pianist, Steve Ali. Steve performed with Russell Webster and considered him a mentor. He recently shared his memories of Russell with WFYI's Kyle Long.
Tell me about the importance of Russell in your life and kind of speak to his skills as a composer and saxophonist and flutist.
Oh, yeah. I ran into Russell early on. I went to a jam session when I was about 19 years old, and I may have told you this story before, but I didn't have my act together playing wise. So I was playing, but I was getting vibe by the other musicians, and Russell was there playing, and he sensed that, and I must have been standing off to the side or something, and he came over to me, and I think he might have put his arm on my shoulder and go, you know, it's okay, you're going to be fine, you know, don't worry about them, you know. And so I thought he didn't have to do that. He's just a wonderful, wonderful human. And so fast forward, I got drafted in the Army and came back out. And then I was in a group with John Von Ohlen and Claude Sifferlin and Marianne Moss. And we were playing, we played at the Lakeview Restaurant. We had a 6 or 7 month residency there. And we would bring in featured artists and for several nights. And we brought in Russell Webster. And his sound, he sounded so fresh and modern to me. I mean, he sounded as modern as anyone. And he had this great song, 4 Hours of Dreams, which is on has been released on his recording. And I recently, last year, completed a big band arrangement of that I've shared with his family. I remember he was a mail carrier, and he whistled. He was also known as the Whistler, which I also wrote a piece called The Whistler for Russell. But he was whistling, and I looked, and there was like 10 kids following Russell on his mail route, you know, going from house to house, and he's whistling this great music and everything. And so... it was just, it was so cool that it was just such a wonderful person.
He had a lot of ambitions as a composer as well. What did you make of him as a composer, Russell?
Wow. I thought the 4 Hours of Dreams was brilliant. And Uncle Funkenstein, which you just featured, you just did a program dedicated to Uncle
Justin
Funkenstein.
Justin Kinchin, a young trumpet player here in the city, he's 21 years old, redid a couple tracks from that record and with Rob Dixon and all the local jazz greats here.
Yeah, it was amazing. I want to revisit that song too myself. Yeah. That's a great song. And that record that he did, Uncle Funkenstein, is really great. And he was tuned in. He was really tuned in. I remember we had a rehearsal at Claude's house once time, and he was listening. And back then we're studying, we're trying to do the latest, greatest thing, you know. And after the song was over, I must have really gone out or something. He said, you know, it's okay to play a little bit of the melody every now and then. But I got that, and I still remember that he said that.
That was Steve Ali sharing his memories of Russell Webster. Up next, we'll hear a rare, unreleased recording of Russell Webster and Pookie Johnson performing the Steve Ali composition, Avenue Walk. This recording was a part of Steve Ali's centennial salute to the Indianapolis Museum of Art and was recorded live at the museum in September of 1983. Thank you. that was The Avenue Walk by Steve Ali, a rare unreleased track featuring Russell Webster on sax. Echoes of Benyana Avenue will return with more music from Russell Webster after this short break. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. This is the final episode in our two-part series celebrating the music of the late Russell Webster, a legendary jazz saxophonist and composer. Russell Webster is best known for his 1983 double LP, Uncle Funkenstein. In 2022, a young Indianapolis trumpet player named Justin S. Kinchin released a tribute to Uncle Funkenstein titled Family Reunion. WFYI's Kyle Long recently spoke with Justin. Let's join their conversation.
Tell me, if you have a connection to this, what it is, and why did you choose to re-record this incredible material?
So I have a couple connections with this project. One of them, so of course, with my grandfather, he was friends with Melvin Ryan. Mm. And so Melvin Ryan heard about me and my love of music. And back when I was about 9 or 10, he came to my house and started giving me lessons for free.
Wow.
And so I saw his name on this project and I was like, oh, this is something I should do. But one of the other bigger pulls was Clifford Ratliff, who's also been a big mentor for me. And so as my grandfather was in the Army and he's a part of the American Legion, I've been tagging along to his meetings ever since I was little as a son of the American Legion. And Clifford Ratliff would be at the organization playing taps at each of the meetings. Mm. And so my grandfather would have me with my violin and I'd be playing the national anthem and then Clifford would be after. So Clifford Ratliff has been super instrumental in my growth. Back when I was first starting out in jazz, he brought me up to like the Indie Jazz Fest and had me play one song with him when I definitely wasn't ready because I was super young at that point. But just seeing something that I could do with him now that I'm a lot more refined was one of the big draws I wanted.
So you had a direct connection to
yes.
this album through
yeah.
your mentors.
Mm-hmm.
What musically, just speaking musically, what drew you to it as a musician?
It was honestly Blue Robe.
Mm.
Yeah, Blue
great,
Robe.
Great
I heard
track.
The groove and I was just instantly just taken by it. And I was like, I need to play this.
yeah, it's a very diverse set of compositions
yeah.
too. How did it strike you, kind of going through the whole record?
Yeah, when I started it and I just played it from top to bottom, I was like, okay, these first three tracks, I feel the straight funk groove. But as soon as we got like near that B side and he had the tone poem and he had the strings and he had all of the singing, I was like, wow, this is such a wild project. And even the bossa nova is just so many different voices. That he's able to explore with all these like powerhouse musicians, that it was just a super cool project to do.
And we should talk about some of the musicians featured mm-hmm. in the reunion project that you're a part of.
Yeah.
I believe Rob Dixon's on sax,
mm-hmm.
Stephen Jones on keys, Cassius Goins on drums,
yep.
the original Uncle Funkenstein trumpet player, Clifford Ratliff, is
yep.
part of this project, Bill Myers on bass,
right.
you on trumpet as well. Anybody we forgot? Or I
nope.
forgot?
No,
okay.
that's all, yeah.
How did this reunion project come together? Was this your idea and you sought out the musicians? Or
yes.
tell me about how that...
I was inspired. I'd been thinking about this project for a few years before we actually went into the studio. And so I had been planting the seed for Mr. Ratliff and his for his scheduling. And so I was like, okay, I'm here for this summer. Let me try to do this project. And so... yeah, I decided to call up all these people. I got help from one of my other mentors, Mark Buscelli, to help find some of the other great musicians.
And may I ask how old you are?
I am now 21.
I'm kind of speechless. So you were 20
right.
when you put this together. That is unbelievable.
Oh, thank
me.
You.
And I thank you for doing this.
This is Justin S. Kinchin with his version of the Russell Webster composition, Blue Robe.
Mm-hmm.
was Justin S. Kinchin performing the Russell Webster composition, Blue Robe. This is the final episode in our two-part series celebrating the music of Russell Webster. WFYI's Kyle Long recently spoke with Russell's daughter, Bonita Webster Coleman, and wife, Lexi Webster. Let's return to their conversation as they discuss the recording of Russell's classic 1983 album, Uncle Funkenstein.
Making this record was time-consuming. It was a major expense. What drove him to do it, and what did you all think of the final product?
Well, I thought it was a very good venue, a product. I was concerned because he tried to do it all himself without any help from
anybody, financially or anything. Nobody put a dime in on it.
I don't know why he was like that, but I think he thought if he reached out for help, they would take part of the credit or something, and he didn't want that.
Sure, yeah.
So I think that's the reason why.
He didn't want to compromise his vision and wanted to have this exactly
his
as
own.
He saw it. Yeah, his own.
Yes.
And I know since he had to rent studio time, he tried to do the whole recording in 2 days.
Wow.
I mean, it seemed like that to me.
Well,
because they would work late into the night, and
he spent a lot of time on it, I think he paid the musicians what
the standard
what he could.
Or yeah.
what was the standard. And they agreed to whatever he gave them.
At the time, but now they're some of them were coming out of the woodwork, trying to take credit for things that they didn't do. They got paid for it with the market at the time.
And some of them think that since the recording is doing so well overseas and all, that I would be getting some of the money. I haven't received a dime of it. But
not even for the album that sold for $3,744.
Right.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the audience that's formed around this music over the decades. Bonnie, you mentioned that Russell had trouble getting this played on local radio. And I know there was some newspaper articles that came out locally when he put the album together, but it didn't go very far in the first couple years.
Right.
But over time, this record developed an international audience. It's called the Holy Grail of Jazz. As you mentioned, a copy sold on eBay, I think, for over $4,000. And there's a copy for sale now on a record website sealed for $8,000. It hasn't sold yet, but someone's
asking
$8,000 for it.
Yeah.
What do you guys make of all this?
Well, he said he wouldn't get famous until he died anyway.
Mm.
That's right.
And he either liked you or he didn't. And if he didn't like you, his persona would turn some people off, I would say.
I know how it is when musicians press up their own records. They have boxes of them cluttering up the house. How do you feel now, looking back? These records are worth a fortune now.
Well,
what do you make of that?
I don't have any of them.
Yeah. What impression does that leave on you?
Well, I just wish that he had made more.
Yeah, made more albums.
I want to give you a chance each to talk about his legacy here in Indianapolis. You know, it's been how many years since he passed? 15?
He passed 2007.
Yeah. Seven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's been about over a decade since he passed.
Right.
We're still talking about him on radio. We're still playing his music. His music is bigger now than I think it ever was.
While he was living.
Yeah. Tell me about his legacy as a musician, and do you think the city does enough to honor and pay tribute to him and other musicians in his generation?
Not really. I do remember that Mayor Hudnut, was it? He gave him a key to the city and told him that his birthday was Russell Webster Day. But nobody ever knew about it.
Yeah. What do you make of Russell's legacy? What are your thoughts on that? We're still talking about him and listening to his music a decade after he passed.
It's timeless. I mean, I think that most of his music could stand up to anything that's being played now. I know a lot of people would probably like to sample it and may have, and we just don't know about it.
Mrs. Webster, what do you think
well,
of Russell's legacy?
His music is it's timeless. It can be from now on. Somebody will enjoy it. Not just for the time he was here and wrote it, but years from now, somebody will pick that up and say, well, look, let's listen to this and see what we can make of it. And a lot of people will enjoy that.
Any final thoughts you want to share on Russell Webster's music or anything we talked about today?
No, other than his music has inspired a lot of people. And when you hear it, you kind of wake up and listen.
Because it wasn't sleepy jazz.
Yeah.
You know, it had a punch. You could feel it if you were into it. And so I think that it'll be around much longer than any of us will be around.
Oh, yes. It will outlive us.
I agree. Bonnie, Mrs. Webster, thank you so much for taking time to be here today and share your memories of the great composer and jazz musician, Russell Webster, a legend of Indianapolis jazz. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have time for one more track from Russell Webster. We'll hear a rare solo recording by Russell titled Sax Cappella. That was Russell Webster with Sax Cappella. Russell Webster died in September of 2007. He was 79 years old, but his music continues to live on with jazz fans around the world. That's all the time we have for this week. Thank you to our guests, Benita Webster Coleman, Lexi Webster, Steve Ali, and Justin S. Kinchin. And thank you for tuning in for our two-part celebration of Russell Webster. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcast. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two.